You'd be hard-pressed to find anyone in this country who doesn't know her name. Her case is one of the greatest miscarriages of justice in Australian history. 38 years ago, Lindy Chamberlain Creighton was sentenced to life in prison for murdering her 9-week-old baby daughter, Azaria. She was released from jail 3.5 years later, but it took 3 decades until 2012 for authorities to officially confirm that Azaria was in fact taken by a dingo in 1980, as Lindy had always claimed. How do you survive that kind of emotional torture and rebuild your life? Lindy, thanks so much for joining us on Life Matters today.
It's a pleasure, Hilary.
Now, Lindy, 2020 marks 40 years since Azaria was taken from your tent at a campsite by Uluru. What's going through your mind as that anniversary approaches?
That's a hard question. Look, in some ways it's like a blink of an eye. In other ways it's like it's your whole life and my life and the life of my boys, at least, has changed dramatically in, you know, before Azaria, after Azaria. With Kahlia, it's different, of course, because she was born afterwards, so she has no before experience. But it's something that becomes, I guess, the new norm. And because people read you about the news, they tend to think that that's the person you are all the time. And yet, when I was speaking this last weekend at an event, somebody said something like that to us, and it's like, well, yes, when you see me here, we're talking about things, but then I go home and it's, do we have enough eggs, and why are people so stupid to be going crazy over toilet paper right now, when if you kept your normal patterns up, everybody would have enough. There's the me you don't see and the me you do see.
And in a way, that's almost what was going on at the time, wasn't it? There was the normal person just trying to get through these terrible events that were happening, and then there was the media portrayal and the image of you that people took into their minds and worked to suit their own interests and ends. Was it clear to you at the time of Azaria's disappearance how much the media was shaping the public's perception of you?
Not to begin with, but certainly afterwards, because I used to watch the news to see what I was supposed to have done that day too. And there was no doubt in my mind that the person on the television had been in a different courtroom to what I'd been on, because it was so different from the reality most of the time. There were a few who told it like it was, but very few, and the rest just put over the picture they wanted, pretty much.
And in the original inquiry, the coroner found you not guilty. Did you think at that point, great, case closed, we can move on now as a family?
For a few weeks, yes. And then we heard that the dentist, Ken Brown, had asked to take the clothes to London, and we thought, okay, so it's not over, because he was so angry that everybody in the courtroom had laughed at him for the way he'd done his experiments. He just wanted to get back at somebody and had said so. And so consequently, that's what he did. He took the clothes to London. He didn't tell the people he was showing them to that there had already been an inquest and a verdict. He just said, basically, this is murder, she's lying, and prove it for me, from what we gather. And it went on from there. We'd also heard other things about the inquest being annulled by a certain person and a guilty verdict being brought in. And sure enough, that happened. And it's, you know, the public don't realise how courts work, and just the same how the media can shape events at the court.
Did Did you trust the court system before those experiences?
I did. I actually thought it had a few faults, but I'd sat on a jury myself twice in years not that far removed from this, and I could see that it wasn't as easy as is portrayed on the TV and things like that. And we are used to hearing that you've got 12 peers on there who listen to the truth, hear it logically, the truth, nothing but the truth, and yeah, it'll get fixed, but it's really got nothing to do with it. It's a game played between lawyers, albeit a game with people's lives. And these days, for the most part, jury members are not your peers, and they are most certainly not peers of the evidence that's being given to them.
And Lindy, the legal system is made up of humans, as you say. Do we need to accept that there's always going to be a certain level of error, even in our justice system that's meant to protect us? Or is there a way to weed out those biases and fix those structural problems that you encountered so tragically?
Well, I think it's a case of none of us is perfect. And while we're human, there will always be mistakes and misconceptions. However, we can do our best to keep those mistakes to a minimum. And there's certainly changes that we need to make. We've got too many archaic laws. At the time our jury system was begun, there was no such thing as forensic evidence. And these days it's so heavily on forensic evidence that we need to make some big changes, and we need to make them in a hurry.
Lindy, you've thought a lot about forgiveness, and you've written in other places about the need to embrace forgiveness and in order to move on. What do you do with that anger and bitterness, though? How did you manage those emotions and manage to find the joy in life?
Well, see, there's a flaw in that question to begin with, because I didn't have anger or bitterness. They are both a choice, and you can choose to hold a grudge and take absolutely everything personally and choose to be a victim, in which case you become angry and you hold a grudge and you want retribution. But if you don't see yourself as a victim to begin with and almost stand outside yourself and say, okay, where is this? Why has it happened? Is it possible that this was just a mistake? If it's a human thing, you'll get a totally different look at life. And I never felt I was a victim. Yes, there were some people that needed to answer for their meddling and what they did, but it was my choice as to whether I took on board and harboured their nastiness or not. And once you know you're innocent and you know God knows you're innocent, what other people think doesn't matter, because ultimately it's between you and God. It's not between you and them. And if they choose to be ignorant, that's their problem.
At the time when you went to jail, you'd been through this media firestorm and all the legal processes and the disappointments of that. How did that complicate your grieving process, Lindy? Were you able to have some time to grieve properly for Azaria then?
See, grief is different for everybody. Some of us internalise it and can't talk about it. Some of us talk about it. Some go through very quickly and rationally. Some of us take a long time to face the truth. And in some ways this hindered me. in other ways, being forced to talk about it all the time was an outlet, because people are not the same, and Michael and I didn't go through it the same. He couldn't handle talking about it in reality. It was more or less only in court that he would talk about Azaria's death. He would talk about our unfortunate experience at Ayers Rock or some other phrase like that which would distance it and make it less real for him, whereas I wanted to talk about this has happened, how do we deal with it, what caused it to happen, what can we do to stop it happening again, what are the facts, what can I find out? And so I did get criticism in the first place for asking questions that some people felt a parent shouldn't ask, or having information on, for instance, one interview I did that still comes back to bite me, when I explained how a dingo would take Azaria out of her jumpsuit, because this is one thing that puzzled us, and so I went looking for the information, and so many people were volunteering information to me and telling me of their own experiences. Old bushies were saying, well, you know, I shoot dingoes and this is what they do in the outback. And they would tell you things they'd observed, and it became an extremely obvious thing. And so I made the mistake of thinking, well, if people are asking, they want to know like I did, so I'll give them the answers I got. Not what I should have done. And, of course, we were in an age where news itself was changing, and it was going from a news service of what happened to a big money-making business where you basically serialised the news so that people watched it. And they even invented swing reporters so that one day I could look guilty and the next day I could look innocent. So people would tune in to that particular news service to see what was happening, like a serial or a soap opera. It was just a melting pot, and what happened to us had all the catalysts to change so many things that the public wasn't used to, and sat there and hung out to see what was happening next, just like you would on a normal inquiry, except it was being manufactured that way, not given as news like they were used to.
Lindy Chamberlain-Creighton, you've talked about the fact that you had to fight to get a lot of information, you had to fight to get the facts out, and you fought really hard for a long time to get a new death certificate for Azaria, which was finally issued in 2012. Where did the strength come from to keep that fight going?
Well, when you know you're innocent, it's not something you give up. Every person has a right to the truth. And the truth has always been important to me. And like I said before, if you know you're not guilty, and God knows you're not guilty, then that's all you need to worry about. And so there are... Well, throughout all this, if I felt a bit down, and yes, I get down like other people do at times, it was like God helped me to cope. And he did. And I doubt that I would have survived like I have without a faith in God. And a lot of people say to me, well, yeah, can't see God, and, you know, what makes you believe in someone you can't see? And to me, the answer is simple. People say you have to have faith to believe in God, but I can tell you I haven't got enough faith to believe I came from a mud puddle and that everything is just by chance and this world exists by chance. That is more faith than I can handle. I believe there's something out there that's a lot bigger than me and who is guiding things. And that to me is God. And we have good and evil in the world. And with that good and evil, there will always be a struggle for supremacy. And I was just one of those cogs in the wheels of the universe that stood up and said, no, I will not put up with the evil. There is a good side and I'm going to stay on that and I'm going to work for truth and fairness.
Lindy, we've only got a couple of minutes left, but I did want to ask you, in your open letter on the 30th anniversary of Azaria's death, you wrote that as a nation you thought we needed to stand up and be counted, stand up to bullies and untruths and sensationalism. How far have we come in that 10 years, do you think?
Oh, now there's a loaded question. You've got another hour or two. It depends on where you are. Some things I think we've progressed and others I think we've gone backwards. So for each person, the answer to that question is going to be different depending on where they are.
That's very true. And there's lots to think about, I think, in that statement as well. Lindy Chamberlain-Creighton, thanks so much for bearing with us today and telling a bit more of your story on Life Matters. We appreciate it.
That's not a problem.
Lindy Chamberlain-Creighton there on the 40th anniversary of the death of her daughter Azaria at Uluru.